Herzlich willkommen zu einer Sonderausgabe vom Marketing Meets Technology Podcast hier von Voxo. Ich bin der Geschäftsführer Timon Hartung von Voxo und wir haben ein SMX-Konferenz-Special mit Kabir Singh. Er ist ein absoluter Spezialist im Bereich der Large-Scale-SEO-Strategien und hat gearbeitet bei Unternehmen wie eBay Kleinanzeigen, kennt ihr jetzt mittlerweile als Kleinanzeigen, bei Expedia und bei Rocket Internet, dem absoluten Inkubator für Large-Scale Startups hier in Deutschland, und arbeitet jetzt auch bei einem Large-Scale SEO Play, und zwar bei Home2Go, dem direkten Konkurrenten zu Airbnb, würde ich sagen. Und damit hat er wieder mit diesem Large-Scale-Thema einfach zu tun. Und deswegen bin ich auch so dankbar, dass er hier vorab vor seiner SMX-Session mit uns hier über das Thema Large-Scale SEO spricht. Die Session ist in Englisch und das Spannende ist, wir werden auf einige Sachen sehr, sehr detailliert eingehen. Das heißt, wir sprechen hier von Experte zu Experte und das ist aber auch gar kein Problem, weil wenn ihr da was nicht versteht, ist es einfach sensationell für euch, weil das Wissen könnt ihr euch natürlich einfach aufschreiben und ihr seht, ihr habt dort einfach eine Möglichkeit noch zu wachsen, für euer Unternehmen Punkte zu finden, die ihr aufgreifen könnt, wo ihr Fragen stellen könnt, und dafür sind wir beide natürlich auch da. Also wenn ihr mal Fragen habt, geht gerne auf Kabir zu, geht gerne auf mich zu, trefft uns natürlich auch gerne auf der SMX, aber das ist das Coole bei dem Podcast auch und deswegen, sorry, wenn wir manchmal super schnell in tiefe Themen reingehen, aber schreibt es euch einfach auf, kommt auf uns zu, fragt einfach nach und dann helfen wir euch natürlich super gerne weiter. Und in diesem Sinne freue ich mich auf unsere Sonderausgabe für die SMX München 2025 Konferenz zum Thema Large-Scale SEO und jetzt geht's los.
Willkommen zu einer neuen Folge von Marketing Meets Technology. Hier hörst du Insights zu Digital-Marketing-Strategien und Technologien. Viel Spaß bei dieser Folge.
So, in this special edition for the SMX conference, I have Kabir Singh here, and he's an absolute expert in large-scale SEO. And this is amazing because he's been working at some of the largest companies here in Germany. And that's like eBay Kleinanzeigen, which you all know now as Kleinanzeigen, which is obviously one of the biggest sites. Then he has worked at the absolute incubator, Rocket Internet, and you know what they do, just, you know, flies through the sky like a rocket. And also for Expedia. And Expedia, as you know, huge company in the traveling space, and that obviously also helps with his passion of traveling. And that's why he's at Home2Go right now. Also a huge, huge large-scale SEO game. So this makes absolute sense that we talk today about his session for SMX conference in Munich, but also about the whole topic of large-scale SEO. So I'm really happy to have you here, Kabir. Thank you for joining me and thank you for spending time with me today and giving our listeners some insights into how to handle large-scale SEO.
Thanks a lot for inviting me. Happy to be here, Timon. And very briefly, my name is Kabir. And as Timon mentioned, I've been working in large-scale SEO for quite a while. So very interested and very looking forward to sharing some insights, some thoughts around how we've handled some of the technical SEO topics that have always been around and will continue to be, you know, continue to be discussed in the next years too.
Oh yeah, I mean that's also really interesting. How do you measure how big a site is? For instance, so usually when we look at a page, right, from an SEO perspective, we usually crawl with Screaming Frog, right? We go in, we crawl with Screaming Frog, and we get, well, 500, 1,000, sometimes 10,000 pages. Sometimes we go into WordPress and we look at the page number. But when you have that scale, and Kleinanzeigen is one of the biggest pages in Germany, Expedia is huge, Home2Go is huge, right? So how do you measure the size? Do you look at internal numbers or do you have an external tool? How do you measure the size?
That's a good question. I think I'll try to give an answer from two sides. There are some internal tools which give an idea, because you have to stop relying on, you know, Screaming Frog is a great one, but when you have to crawl or look at sections of the page, it's sections of the site, then it's important. But at that large scale, you're talking about enterprise crawling tools that give you an idea. And there also, I remember, at least from past, the full possible crawl, I think, even one time it happened. So that's theoretically not even possible. So we usually go for certain sections of the website. We crawl them and try to get the maximum learning and then try to kind of use that to scale it up. So yes, essentially, the files, you talk about the files don't, that's the when you talk about large scale, those files are not fitting in Excels anymore. So you're not dealing with Excels anymore. I think that's the kind of the biggest difference when you talk about, you know, medium, small to medium scale to large scale. You're really looking at hints from different areas and then using that to basically take decisions.
Yeah, and I think the problem also is, even if you would get it into an Excel sheet, even if you could look at it at, in Screaming Frog, there is no added value of looking at 10 million URLs versus 100 million URLs versus even more URLs. At that point, it just becomes undigestible by humans. And I think then only machines can even evaluate issues here. So that's one of the things I was always looking at. So I really enjoy looking at smaller crawls, like even like 100,000 URLs. I can still like manage around and sort. But everything above that, and we've done relaunches with up to a million URLs, it just, you know, we just package it. You know, it's like, okay, all these URLs are in the same category. They have the same problem. And we just look at maybe 20 or 50 just to identify methodical template problems. But it's really interesting. I always come up with this question because we've had this always in the past. And I've always wondered how like the big companies measure it. But it's, you can only approximate since site, you know, colon on Google, site colon search is gone. There's no data anymore on how many pages there really are. Yeah. Right?
It's that's the same thing. I mean, it's limited. So you basically are looking at a sample and then, you know, kind of taking decisions based on that. And I think theoretically speaking, so two things that I wanted to say. One thing is, the funny thing is, even though we talk about, you know, crawl budgets and so on, when you talk about large websites, which also have a lot of inventory, you see Google also every now and then crossing their limit, which otherwise you would say, you know what, crawl budget and be limited. If there is inventory or, you know, value out there, you see them crawling at the scale that you would not again expect it on relatively, you know, smaller platforms where also maybe the inventory is also not unique enough. So there you're even more restricted to budget, whereas you don't see a ceiling up there of the crawl. So you're saying, oh, if that's an indicator for you to take decisions, you see that, okay, you know what? It's actually not too bad if the value add is the important part of the value add, where you think it's the value add where you can use that to basically navigate through and cut a line, whether it's via the setting up the internal linking rules or setting up what pages are then after that not adding too much value.
Exactly. That's also a really interesting core budget, by the way. Just for everybody outside listening, is basically Google does not have unlimited resources, even if it feels like that every day. But if they have to crawl the whole internet, they obviously have limited resources, and they allocate for each page depending on their size and relevance and authority in the market. They allocate a crawl budget with how much machine time and how many pages they crawl each day or each week. And that's really interesting, because that's if your page doesn't get crawled, it cannot be shown on the Google index. So you cannot be found. How do you allocate that crawl budget, or how do you control the crawl budget? Because you obviously have huge sites, and Google will rarely like be able to crawl the whole site in one day, or like with newspapers. So how do you steer the crawler in that way? Do you have any like specific recommendations?
So just continuing on the last ones, I think we've seen limits where they've crossed the limits of, you know, trying to crawl as much as possible, even though, you know, giving them certain directions of, you know, which areas not to go into, or blocking certain section of the site, either by, you know, typical robots or no indexing or even masking links. But you see they want to basically grab as much as possible, especially when they think there is a value add in terms of inventory, at least, you know, during the rebranding or the, you know, the whole big migration. You see those crawls going through the roof, which was, I mean, those numbers on day to day, you would not see that. But going back to your original question, there are certain sections of the site which using data from internal tools, external demand data, previous crawl logs, conversion related metrics, we basically try to say, you know what, this is not a value add anymore. So again, not manually going by section, but having certain rules where if the criteria is met, along with obviously the supply side, whether you want to call it inventory or listings, you basically make sure those sections are no longer then visible. I think that's the steering part from these data points can continuously, and it's not a one-time thing, it's an ongoing thing based on, you know, if the data is going up, you basically, those filters are no longer filters. So, you know, those becomes areas that can easily be kind of crawled through, walking through. So to make it dynamic, scalable, but at the same time, bit dependent on data.
Very interesting. So have you seen that the Googlebot actually sticks to the robots.txt, or does he sometimes even ignore the robots.txt in your large scale cases?
I think primarily it's very rare case that I would imagine that a certain section which was crawled that was that it was not allowed to. Of course, you always have to differentiate between the ads bot and the smartphone. So ad bots, you would always see it anywhere possible, but on the smartphone one, I don't recall a particular area which was specifically blocked that was getting crawled even during when we were moving from, you know, a domain to domain.
Mm-hmm. Explain the difference between the two bots. That would be interesting to understand.
I think your ad bots is for the paid marketing. They're trying to crawl because of they're trying to crawl as much as possible, as much as been, you know, given or hinted by a paid team, and they are not restricted. You could still have their restrictions also, but they tend to crawl because it does not have direct impact with, you know, your overall crawling budget on the SEO side. So they are a bit, I would say, have a bit more freedom, although I can't really pinpoint if they are also crossing their limits or how much they're crossing their limits. But you kind of, at least when we did the log analysis, we tend to, you know, see them more often.
Yeah, makes sense. Yeah, the ad bot at the end, I mean, just checks if everything, you know, where the user's going to go works out. So I understand that. And
even with the dynamic ads, where they have a possibility to even choose the pages, and those pages, maybe they were not explicitly restricted, they have a bit more flexibility. Not too sure on that, but you, at least from a volume point of view, if you're paid is a big chunk of where you're kind of spending, you would tend to see more of those. I mean, we see that at least now, and at Home2Go we see, you know, ads bot obviously significantly high because of the, you know, their limit. But back, we were not spending too much, so you saw them in areas where you wouldn't find them, but, you know, not that you were expecting it there.
Yeah, makes sense. Especially for the crawling or indexing, do you use the indexing API a lot? Is that important for you guys, especially at large scale?
So on large scale, I think we relied on two or three things. One thing was obviously internal linking. That was, I think, the main area where we wanted to make sure if it's linked, how it's linked top down. That should make sure, because the crawlings were so frequent on the page, if internal linking wise it's sorted so that high quality pages are distributing it to, you know, whether you want to call it the search pages, faceted search pages, or kind of pages that needed, they are covered. So I think that was the first part. We had something called, you know, typical old school directory or listing pages. You can name it whatever, you can call it sitemap in the HTML format, where you had all possible combinations in different formats. So those pages were nothing but just listing pages. They are not for the user, but they at least had all the logical hierarchy wise.
Okay.
They're not the typical navigation pages, but as you call them, directory pages is probably the best word I could say, that try to cover all the pages. So at least you still won't cover all possible pages in that, but you would have the most important combinations covered on those pages. I mean, they are kind of, I wouldn't say they're a replacement of sitemap, they are complementary to the sitemap. And then obviously you also push them via the sitemap and then the indexing API. So these are basically the areas that you would look at to make sure they're getting fulfilled with their own criteria, of course, but they're the ones, they are having the pages that you think are either you need them because they're getting popular, because suddenly there's a surge, there's seasonality, or the usual internal search behavior, if that's what you're dependent on, they're kind of flown in these three, four areas.
Yeah, that's super interesting. So you basically rely on several factors to get everything indexed that you want to have indexed. That's just really interesting. But obviously you don't use internal linking only for indexing, right? So you also use it to push power to certain pages. And how does that work on your side at large scale, especially because that's way more difficult? And how's the impact? Does it work?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'll actually just take it one step back. Also on the previous question, I think indexation is also an interesting one, because the question was, how do we make sure we get it indexed? Because what I at least felt even in the past years issue essentially was not so much of indexation, because you see that, you know, indexability was rather much easier. You would, the moment, even if you don't push it via internal linking, even if it's purely in the sitemap, you would see that it's, the reach was already there, because again, it obviously has a factor of authority and branding. If there are certain brands that are thought of, especially large scale, that, you know, they definitely have much higher quality, it's more of a push versus pull approach. On relatively smaller brands, you would rather want to push and make sure it gets indexed, versus on the other side, there is an incentive for the bot to basically try to grab as much as possible. So it was more about, you know, indexation is not much of a problem, but it's more about which pages should be a bit more higher than the other ones. And I think that's kind of a segue into what you were asking, how internal linking wise we kind of made sure. So I think to give a little bit of view, the whole system we tried to use was, or always tried to use, at least on large scale, is automated. Mm-hmm. And automated basically means we have to choose certain criteria, you know, certain section of certain category or subcategory of pages will obviously be linking into their own category. We looked at internal search. Generally, for big, large-scale platforms, is a very good representation of external search. And I mean, that's something we've also, you know, measured it from different angles, which means we could totally rely on searches as a proxy and use that as a criteria to understand, okay, these are the most to least important pages. And that also enabled us to, even if there is seasonality or surges, that automatically popped up the, let's call it the scoring factor, or, you know, as you would in external search or external tools, you would call it search volume. It would automatically search up. It would automatically have a higher scoring. So the likelihood that those terms or those pages show up on in the relevant category at a higher frequency automatically goes higher, apart from other criteria that was used. But this was the main driver of the criteria. So we didn't have to rely on any of the external demand before the seasonality is finished, and then you realize and that's already a part of the system. Searches go up, those certain pages automatically are present more. Searches go down, or the inventory goes down, they automatically start disappearing from linking. That means they are present for indexation, but they don't end up having as much of higher authority as it's needed, because as natural they automatically get phased out.
That's super smart. So you basically use the internal search to find out what is important right now. Then you know the pages that are important right now, and then you automatically link from other strong pages to those mainly searched pages. Wow, that's really cool. That should be working in that within a few days. So that's, I mean, like from an automation standpoint. So
yeah.
Then Google comes from the outside and sees all those new links, which they love. They love the new links, and then they follow the new links, and then they're putting more more emphasis on this page, and then it goes up in ranking, obviously. That's
that automatically really helps with, obviously, the content on that page, which is primarily inventory, listings, offers. That's definitely changing because of, you know, the number of, you know, people putting up different kinds of ads or inventory in whichever context you want to say. Mm-hmm. And then you also have other parts of the page that continue to change, making it also, as I said, the problem was never the index, problem never primarily is not indexing, but more about which are important pages, and this which pages end up getting frequently updated also gave crawlers an indication, oh, this is getting, you know, very frequently updated, maybe this is even more important. So another signal that, along with the listings being changed, this part being changed, kind of help. So on the navigation side, the static navigation, that is the one that more or less stayed concept, more or less stays constant, so that does not need to, because that's the standard structure. But on mm-hmm. the variable part, these are the two things that are the moving pieces.
I agree. I think that updating the content to be, you know, very fresh, that's what Google uses as a term, and pointing internal links to it is definitely a very clear signal for Google that this is important right now. Google normally actually uses that signal very strongly to push those pages up as well. It's just something we see that many many companies are struggling a lot with, this internal linking, because it's so hard to do, because it's not like very easy, because you have to put a lot of thought into your strategy, and then the automation part is really hard. Automating it like 50% is very easy, but the other 50% will be super wrong and will not lead to the desired result. So that's why the challenge is so high. Obviously, like simple links, you know, related articles, that's the easiest one. But that's also the worst part of internal linking. Like that's like 1% of internal linking. That what you just said is super cool. And going back to your topic at SMX, you said in the session description that internal search is a gold mine. And I want to get back to that as we're talking about internal search. Tell me a bit more about this gold mine. What you can, you know, is there anything else we can grab from this internal search gold mine?
I think partly I try to cover that, you know, we use, that's something that can be, especially for large scale, can be used really as a metric, because especially when you talk within the SEO community, everything is around search volumes and external demand, but especially for large scale, you can easily say, you know, that's the best possible, not just a proxy, but in some cases, those are also your actual users. So if you're using internal search to have your important or the popular pages get more popular, that's also a representation of which other pages, which eventually which convert, whichever are your conversion metrics, yeah, but would convert better. So that's kind of one part of it. And the other part of it is how can we utilize, you know, what's the utilization of, how can we best utilize search? And I think that's where the whole faceted opening up the faceted search pages, or actually the search pages, because that's also very big discussions that I've seen, heard, discussed in the past, that can you open up your search and risk the whole duplication and canonical problem and page dilution?
Yeah.
Because if you don't open up your search, you would look at certain pages and keep creating those equivalent search pages, or you just open up in a way that A, it's scalable, and B, you have certain measures to ensure all the potential issues coming from that are already addressed at the source. So those search pages, so that's why the moment there is a, you know, as you can imagine, on large scale, you're talking about infinite pages. The moment you do a search, it's like a new page. So when traditionally we are always thinking a page means you have to create a page, but essentially you're using an unlimited service just to index those pages, whether you want to call it indexation or link those pages, as we said from the previous discussion. So the moment searches go higher, you're not worried which searches are that. If the system is in place that those automatically become linked, they are essentially pages which are equivalent of a browse page or a typical category page. There's no differentiation, so you don't have to worry about the, you know, if that page is less quality or something, and you have other criteria like unique inventory on that page being served. That's as if it was an automatically created category page already in the part of your overall hierarchy of the pages. And that covers a really good percentage, because there is only a certain limit that you can go up to categories or, you know, facets or attributes and so on, versus this basically opens it up. And I think without showing exact numbers, I mean, if you look also within, you know, the whole of Europe, that's easier to kind of comprehend or see examples. You can see certain bigger large scale websites which try to take a little bit of a manual approach, and, you know, the potential they might be missing, versus if you kind of open it up, then you see that typical 80-20 ratio that we always say, you know what, 80% of, you know, the traffic comes from 20%. So for large scale, this 20% there's a very fat middle to long tail that this search basically opens up for you. And yeah, that could, without sharing exact numbers, that could be somewhere in the range of even 50-70% of your overall traffic. That's the scale we are talking about.
Because that is, and to be honest, this is like the long tail that everybody talks about, like the long tail searches. And you think you have all the long tail through your product detail pages, through your category pages, but you do not. You do not. That's why Google still says, I think they see a lot of the searches that are being placed within Google, they see them for the first time. And I mean, this happening after 20 years is still quite crazy, right? But what is the biggest risk of opening it up, opening the search up? Because this is obviously, we've discussed this also many times, and faceted search is like filter pages, very similar, because it's just the same problem, right? You open up all the filters, you open up all the search, you have a lot of new pages with very similar content.
Yeah. Now, I think the answer is always, it's not opening it up completely. I think you need just smarter rules in place. But the point that I want to highlight is not being scared to open up. I think what we always be, you know, especially, you know, in the discussion is around being, you know, being scared of faceted search pages and opening it up. I think that's the part that I want to basically highlight, that we don't need to be scared. At the same time, you need to have rules in place that you're not getting into an unlimited area, because obviously there are certain price is a typical example. Price, even though you could justify in certain cases, you know, there are certain attributes, certain categories where price, we always saw the benefit of opening it up in a very smarter way. But that's the part where you need to give the information to the automation, because that's what automation can't give you, that certain areas where you don't need it to go and certain a good chunk of area it's kind of open for indexation. So that's kind of one part of it. So setting up rules, making, but while at the same time not being, let's say, afraid of different sections that can be opened up. So that's one part. And the other part, which I think, even though that has been said quite a lot, I think it's really important, if you might be a super big, large website, or you want to kind of become one, but if your authority does not, you don't have that much of authority in terms of either brand, I think that's something which is also not easily answerable. It needs to be tested and played around a little bit to see what's the maximum, what's the limit that I could basically sustain in that particular market when I'm competing, that I could go with this much of URLs. So I think that's the part that is important. If you are a super big brand, that you probably have a little bit more flexibility to play with the pages. If you're relatively a smaller one and you have some bigger ones, then you have to be a bit more careful. So that's the second part, which connects always with the technical side of the things, because you could be playing it right and doing it right, but at the same time, your brand is not giving you the enough power to cover, then all those risks that we talk about, duplication, they become just even more.
Exactly.
Which I think that's how it basically joins the that's how it gets connected with that part.
That would have been my question as well. So how do you handle all SEOs are going to say, hey, faceted search, filter pages, you're going to have a ton of duplicate content. Duplicate content obviously can be a huge issue, but we all know it's not like a per se penalty. It just doesn't know what to rank. But the question is, like, if you have faceted search or filter pages, how do you handle unique content on that page? Yes, the listings might be different a little bit, but do you try to generate like a little bit of unique content at the top of the page or at the bottom of the page or something like that?
I think rules to understand what is a duplicate, what is similar, I think that is, I would imagine, or at least from past time speaking, I think that for me is way more important than basically adding other elements. So the other elements which are generated on the page, if it's a, you know, blue t-shirt and a brand page versus red, is a very different thing. The moment you talk about other filters where it gets very closer, important part is your offering on those two pages differing more than 10%? Is it 90% similar? And those can easily be measured at scale in the background. If they are, then those are similar, then the one can be indexed and not the other version or other versions. If that's different, then you're already, the offering on the page, if it's 82, which I think was 90% of the page content was that, then you're already talking about good enough, different enough, with the offering for the user being different enough so they can coexist with obviously the headlines and meta, which are anyways coming from a structured system, being slightly different.
How do you decide when there's a page that is only 10% different from the other page, which one to keep, which one to kick out?
Very, very good question. And I think the rule of thumb is obviously higher up on the hierarchy, because internal linking wise, that's also obviously much easier or much more connected if we were to open it. So that's kind of the rule of thumb. But if they're at the same level, then if there are any other internal metrics or behavior from past, that's the data that basically is able to decide. In the end, those rules came up from basically looking at some of these sections of the site and saying, you know what, this is a good proxy to do that, and then that kind of that rules basically take over.
Yeah, makes sense. So when you're handling a page that has like 10 million, 100 million pages plus, you have quite a big responsibility when you're pressing that change button, right? So you're suggesting a new SEO thing, like a new optimization, and then you're sending it off to the devs and they implement it. But at that moment, it gets delivered to all of those pages. So how do you handle that? Or do you handle it that you take only a small portion, like test it for one category first?
Yeah, I think, both answers actually. For the first one is if it's actually a significant change, then it has to be by certain sections, or even if we can do it purely in a dev environment kind of a thing, to really test if nothing goes south. If it's more to do with change, more like a test, then we used to. I mean, I think almost now, small or big doesn't matter the size of the website. Everybody is at least doing parts of split testing. So you do it and try to kind of measure and find out, because obviously we have our hypothesis, but using split testing in a way, especially if you can easily create those groups, is the best possible way. You could have winners, but you could also have losers, but then you've only, you kind of take them out. It takes a while, and then you basically recover from that if it was really that negative. But you also, with that kind of a traffic, you also see that very quickly. And also, I think when we talk about large scale, we also need to see a lot of the things are not, let's say, very SEO. So a lot of the things are very in sync with how users see it. So some of these learnings, or at least hypothesis, can already be seen from the typical A-B test, which don't work for SEO, but give already a good idea if we were to take that A-B test approach. So that kind of also helps, or always used to, complement if we were to go with these, let's call it the riskier test, which is like, as you said, pressing the button, because you'd never want that feeling where pressing a button could basically switch off everything or burn everything. So those are the different ways to kind of de-risk it a little bit.
Yeah, that makes absolute sense. You don't want to publish something that, I don't know, doesn't work well for all the pages, because it's a hypothesis. Obviously, like if it's like an H1 or something, it makes sense to push it for all the pages. But yeah, I absolutely understand that. It's just, that's just wild. But yeah, so large scale SEO, I mean, it's been basically part of your whole career. And do you have any advice out there for also people working in large scale, how to approach this whole sector, or who want to learn more? And maybe one really important thing I'd like to touch on as well is like the PDPs, product detail pages, that vanish, right? We always have the thing that they vanish now with Home2Go. Obviously, the vanishing factor is not as fast, right? The homes will probably stay on for, let's say, 1 or 2 years, but they might gather links and people might have loved them, and then they might get sold or vanish. But on Kleinanzeigen or eBay Kleinanzeigen, it could be hours, days, how long the listing is online, and then it's gone. So it's super crazy, and I'd just love to hear your take on how to handle this crazy part.
Yeah, I think on the PDP side, on the travel side, you tend to have those pages. You would want to continue having those pages, because unless there are some legal issues around it, you would want them, because house is not going away. What goes away is actually the availability. So they become, useless from a point of view of you can't basically get conversions out of it. So in your internal linking setups, if you have conversion as one of the metrics, that's the part where it gets affected. But you would still want those pages to stick around as much as possible until the legal issues can be sorted. On the typical product, I think it's also a talk of the industry, because the whole e-com has that issue. There is, I would say, no easy way out in the listings that are gone. You have to take them out sometimes, because of legal issues. We used to have users complain that, I don't want this listing because the listing had my number. So you just don't have any option but to basically take them out. What we tried to do was at least keep them live for a bit, because you could still get traffic, and then use that to funnel the traffic to other similar property, PDP. So that's the only thing that helped, but that's a temporary measure. And obviously, as much as good it was for SEO, there were other areas which said, there's a very high cost, because the number of deleted ads, that's also very, very big amount. So the amount, even reducing it by one day, was a huge cost saving. So as much as it benefited SEO and we were raising the flags, we had to, there was a certain limit beyond which there was just no option to do it. So as much as those redirection nobody likes, and getting rid of especially some of the ads or inventory that become viral or get popularity, really one-off cases is what we could, and really this was the part which is not automated, which was manual. Like we said, it could stay longer, but in most of the majority of the cases, after a certain time period, redirection to the best possible page was the only way out.
Yeah. Would you recommend redirecting pages even if they don't have external backlinks? Obviously at a super large scale, it sometimes gets really wild, but do you recommend that?
Yes, for the reason that, on one side, you could just not redirect and, not think about it because they never had backlinks. But from I always tend to think also from the user angle, because if there was some traffic, especially on large scale, we even saw that, we also want to help the users, because otherwise you end up on a 410. You could have a smarter 410 page, but the particular FSP or a, specific navigation page is way more useful for the user to basically in the end convert more, because on a grander scheme of things, SEO is there to also help users in the end, and sometimes those things end up mattering as a platform for the overall user experience much more. So I think that's kind of the broader answer for why we would still want to redirect them to the best possible, closest possible page.
You're absolutely right, and at large scale, especially large scale you're talking about, there is traffic on those pages. And I've seen it myself. There is so much traffic on these pages. Yeah, there's no backlink in Ahrefs, in SEMrush, but there is somewhere a bookmark, and somebody sent it via WhatsApp, and somebody sent it via email. And there is a lot of, there's a lot of links out there, and the people are clicking on them. And it's just one person a day clicking on one link a day, but still, it's a lot of traffic over the year.
Over the year, and if you multiply it also on the pages. And I think this is something which, again, it's a very different mindset, because we only worried about links that were crawled and seen in the tools, but the number of shares via Reddit, via that percentage of the shares, that is, especially for large scale, it's not a small amount. You see that in forums. Yeah. I mean, for bigger websites, you always see those links when you're crawling through those forums, but when you aggregate them or when you see the referral traffic, the real numbers, those numbers are not small. So those numbers were always used, not just when we were looking at backlinking data, but rather add this as an aggregate, because that's the real so-called voice of links across the web that was helping not just basically those pages, but overall the domain to build authority.
Perfect. Now, I love the topic. It's really good, and it's really good to talking to an expert like you about this, because it just helps to give so much more insight. What are you looking forward to the SMX this year? What's like your, why are you happy of going there?
I think you always, whether I'm there physically or going through some of the decks which people present, it's always super exciting to see what people are working on in the challenges that they are talking about. Last SMX, a lot of people talked about AI or purely automation. There is always a lot to learn from, and especially we have so many experts out there, because it's not limited to just couple of very few people. So it's really, you have somebody from, you might have not heard of a certain niche or a certain business, and they are talking about a certain specific part of the SEO. SEO is so broad. It's it motivates you. I mean, it motivates me, and I try to learn a lot from it and see what is the most actionable thing that I could use it even the next day, because that's how we kind of these, especially for SEO, these conferences are where you can share learnings at that depth and use them in your day-to-day moving forward.
I agree. I totally agree. I think SMX is one of the few conferences where you go and you actually get like super detailed, in-depth tactical stuff, knowledge that you can use in your business, in your company, the next day. And it's not only for business owners, but also for in-house SEOs. It's so valuable. So I think your session is going to be catered towards SEO experts and in-house SEOs the most, who consult or work on large scale SEO problems. And I think there's going to be a lot of really cool takeaways there. And the other thing that's really important, I think, is also here to mention, like, once you get off stage, you're there to be talked to and to connect and to talk about those problems, because I'm pretty sure there's not that many SEOs out there that have this amount of knowledge in this depth in this space.
So that's really cool. I mean, the connection part is extremely, extremely, you know, you see that people are also very open to connecting. I remember from past, you know, you can just walk up to anybody, really, you know, industry leader or whatever, and then they're super open about a lot of things. So that's definitely another part that I'm looking forward to.
Yeah, that's why we love the SMX. And obviously, it's a little bit of self-promotion, but I'll be moderating you. So it's going to be fun. This session is going to be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to it so much. But where can people find you? Like, I can recommend everybody who's listening to this podcast, obviously, to come and join SMX Munich, right? But everybody who's not listening, obviously, who's listening but might not be coming or is coming and wants to get into contact with Kabir, how can we reach you? Like, what's the best place to contact you?
Best place, I would say LinkedIn. I can share a URL later, but I think LinkedIn is the best place to reach. And
I'll put it in the show notes so everybody can click on it and
should be the easiest one.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much for your time. I'm really looking forward to our session at SMX, and so much valuable info that we can actually use for problems we're working on as well, especially with vanishing PDPs and stuff like that. It's always really valuable. So thank you so much. And I'm looking forward to see you very soon at SMX Munich.
Thanks a lot. And super excited and really, really good to know that you'd be the one moderating. So looking forward to the session and see you at SMX in about a month or so.
Yeah, exactly. So, and if you like the session, obviously, just, comment, the podcast and give us a great rating and obviously become a subscriber. We'd love that because there's going to be more content like this coming up. And see you in the next show.
Das war's für diese Folge von Marketing Meets Technology. Bis zum nächsten Mal.